I'm Frank Vaughn. It's 2:25 p.m. November 17th, and this is the second edition of The Fulcrum. The difference between The Fulcrum and the FPV podcast, the FPV podcasts are generally just spoken word. This is going to be a little bit more analytical. We're going to use the internet as our backdrop so that we can examine things more analytically, as you remember from other coverages I've done over the life of the channel. Please look for the podcast. You don't have to watch. You can listen on Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, all the different podcasting platforms. You can go to my website, get everything there. You can listen to it, live stream it right off the website. Please consider supporting at the website via the donate link. If you value the content, it will always remain advertisement free. The first thing I want to examine is guillotines. You didn't hear me wrong. We're talking about guillotines. Guillotines that the government of Canada has put out a contract for so that people can bid to provide the guillotines to the government of Canada. They're programmable hydraulic guillotines. This has got everybody up in arms. I'm getting emails and I'm getting messages about the guillotines, what's going on with the guillotines. Of course, it's tied in with the pandemic and all this other stuff, and people are saying, why are we getting pandemic guillotines and all this other stuff? Money flies around within the bureaucracy. When governments introduce programs, money flies all over the place. You have no idea where it's going to end up, and everybody and their uncle is going to take advantage of it. Look at the people who flock to the CERB and the now CRB and all these different government programs, which I will never take. I just will not take the bribe. I'd rather sink than take the bribe. There's all kinds of grant programs. There's all kinds of loan programs. There's all sorts of things to grease the palms of society with their own money, which is being devalued through inflation because the government is borrowing so much currency, stealing the wealth right out of your pocket to give it back to you in programs and to buy guillotines. But when we do a little bit of a Google search, what we figure out is this is just one example of a Eurocut hydraulic programmable guillotine. It's for cutting paper, folks. And I have no idea what they're doing with it. If they're making vaccine inserts or they're making leaflets, who knows what's going on, but they're not actually going to cut your head off if you've got COVID. Moving on to Canada's infamous prime minister, the guy who cherishes China's basic dictatorship because they can just turn their economy around on the dime and turn it green when China's the biggest polluter in the world, and a guy who fawned over his dad. I mean, the leader of the Cuban Revolution, Fidel Castro, when he died, publishing a eulogy which went on to spawn a hashtag called Trudeau Eulogies, and thousands upon thousands of people wrote mock eulogies because Trudeau celebrated, just like Jagmeet Singh celebrated, this dictator who did horrible things to his island people in the name of liberating them by imposing socialism. You know that pattern that we see over and over again in the world where they promise utopia, but it ends with people eating rats and throwing away their babies and things like that? Those are the kinds of people that Trudeau celebrates. But this is about what he's got in mind for Canada, not his basic admiration for dictators. And this is from Brian Lilly over at the Toronto Sun, who is one of the last journalists we have in this country as Canada falls deeper and deeper down the globalist rabbit hole. The Liberals spent the summer speaking about the need to reimagine Canada post-COVID. They even adopted the Biden campaign slogan, Build Back Better. It wasn't just Biden who had Build Back Better. The entire world of so-called free leaders is united around this message that COVID, because it disrupted our economy, that's a misnomer. COVID didn't actually disrupt things. The state's response to COVID disrupted things. So they've created all this chaos. They're driving small businesses under. The big conglomerates from Amazon, Walmart, the restaurants, McDonald's, Wendy's, they're winning while all the small businesses are losing. All the small service providers are losing. In my case, on my farm, where we sell garlic, they just shut down, killing our income. And like I said, I refuse to take the bribe. The CERB and now the CRB, I think it's the CRB, technically I qualify for, I just won't take it. I'm going to survive because of you people. I'm going to survive because of the work of my own hands. I will not take the bribe. I will not take the business loans. I won't take any of it because it's all part of a process. Trudeau went on camera in September as part of a United Nations meeting. And he said, this pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset. This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems that actually address global challenges. And they use things like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change as their clarion call, They're going to try and save the world, and the way they're going to do it is by engaging with modern monetary theory, by printing money, driving up inflation, giving you a guaranteed income, abolishing private property. This isn't some conspiracy anymore. The World Economic Forum, everybody's seen the video now where they said by 2030 we want to get rid of private property. You're going to rent everything you use, and you're going to be happier. And they got the opiated Ambien like film quality where you've got the focus on the face. These people have these really fake smiles, the background's all blurred out, and it's I swear, these video clips are designed for people that are out of their minds on psychotropics. Maybe that's the desired outcome, or maybe that's the target audience. I have no idea. But these folks, these international finance capitalists, these billionaires and their representatives in our governments, because that's what your legislatures are, folks. They're representatives of the international financial class, the people that control your central banks. They talk about taxes. They don't talk about inflation. They don't talk about the nature of money, how it actually exists, how every time they borrow money, every time the Canadian Treasury issues bonds and they walk across the street and a central bank buys them up, how they literally take money out of your pocket and then redistribute it how they want. And you see rising prices, but you don't realize the prices aren't really going up. It's the value of your dollars are going down. It's the biggest tax that nobody talks about. That's what these people, these people who control the mechanism, who can literally create money out of thin air to solve all their problems. So when you talk about companies that are too big to fail, when you talk about new programs and guaranteed incomes and all this stuff, there's people who have the power just to create that loot. And they create it by stealing your wealth out of your pocket without you even knowing it. And nobody tells you about the underlying structural mechanism that is our financial systems and how the very people who control those financial systems, who can guarantee their own wealth, who can generate their own wealth, who can take it right out of your pockets, how they're the ones who are pushing so-called egalitarianism and equality. And they're funding the so-called efforts at climate change. We hear about the Paris Climate Treaty, and Aaron O'Toole's on board, and Justin Trudeau's on board. Everybody's on board with the Paris Climate Treaty, but it won't do a damn thing for the environment. The authors of the Paris Climate Treaty even admitted that it was a redistribution scheme. It had nothing to do with the environment at all. The stuff is all on public record. I think I've done videos about it before. This is what they're up to. The rich, powerful men that when I was a young man, a teenager, and in my 20s, the people I used to go to the protest to protest now control the protest movement. They ain't going to lose. They're not going to give anything up. They're still going to possess their private property, but they want to reorganize your life, and they want to do it without your consent. I want to remind you, Justin Trudeau is the leader of a minority government, and there's questions flowing around about the election. I've said in the past that I think the election in Canada was actually representative of what people chose, but there's reasons to doubt that when it comes to Dominion voting in the United States and what's going on down there and the fact that Dominion's based in Toronto. As I said in yesterday's video, Canada is a well-known hub for international terrorism, not just Islamic terrorism, Sikh terrorism, Chinese front groups working here, the Chinese government coming in here and targeting Taiwanese nationals and people from Hong Kong. You just have to talk to those expat communities. Canada is a well-known money laundering capital for some of these forces. It's all out there in the open. It's well-known. And this guy is ruling like a dictator when he only has minority consent. It's pretty sick. And people often ask, and the reason I brought this up is they say, why don't you talk about Trudeau more? Why don't you talk about Conservative Party of Canada more? Here it is. Very simply. There's no hope for Canada politically unless the United States can sort out its constitutional crisis, which it's coming into right now. If the elections in the United States are allowed to stand as they are, if election fraud is not exposed, if the case is not heard by the judiciary, if justice is not done, the sun sets on the West permanently until Mother Nature, God, whatever you want to call it, upsets the entire apple cart and we start all over again. It's literally that critical. The moment in time that we occupy is that sensitive. It literally is the fulcrum of the century. With all that being said, you will have to forgive me if my focus for the next little while is predominantly on U.S. politics. Now, I wasn't involved in the lead-up to the 2020 election, with a couple reasons, the valid reasons that I've already provided about farming and getting ready and trying to clean up my life and sort out my own issues as I try to stand on my own feet without taking any government bribes. That was a big part of it, but it was also knowing in advance, in my heart of hearts, and in my reasonable mind, that the election didn't mean anything. That the election was going to be exactly what it is right now. There was no way that this was going to be a free and fair election. It was foreshadowed, it was guaranteed, and if you buy the vote totals for either Biden or Trump, I got some oceanfront property in Montana for sale for you. FEC Chair Trey Trainer, head of the Federal Election Commission, said in a tweet Tuesday that he believes Trump campaign lawyer Sidney Powell's claim of widespread election fraud. Powell, a former federal prosecutor, recently claimed the president's legal team has been receiving a deluge of evidence concerning voter fraud and other irregularities, telling Fox Business that she has enough proof to launch a widespread criminal investigation and that we're getting ready to overturn election results in multiple states. Now, there's mechanisms built into the Constitution. Unfortunately, too few Americans actually understand how the Constitution was set up, why it was set up that way. And in that lack of understanding, they don't understand that the Constitution is functioning right now. And this is a test of how much of a foundation the United States has in the Constitution, this entire process. Votes are only one part of picking a president. Certification is a part of it. The legislatures at the state level are a part of it. This is a procedure. And with the advent of Dominion voting machines, which are subject to fraud, we got Princeton professors on the record, folks, who have indicated in detail how easy it is to rig these things. Sidney Powell herself has presented the evidence, at least informally to the media, has not presented the case in a court of law just yet. I would look to tomorrow for things to start happening on that front. We already know that machines are only introduced into elections, like in Venezuela and in other places, to do one thing. And that's to rig the outcome. The only safe way to do elections is paper balloting, hand counting, and direct reporting. Canada did it this way. I've always had faith in Canadian elections. The last election, truth be told, I still think the results were accurate. However, those machines crept in. They started tinkering with the laws. Now Justin Trudeau is talking about a new set of rules for elections, and he's saying he's doing it for you. That's your first warning that you're about to get screwed out of your democratic process. And this, again, is why my focus is on the United States right now and how these proceedings play out. The president, who is Donald Trump, it's not Joe Biden. Trump is still president. He still controls the Pentagon. He still controls the office of the executive. He is behaving in a very confident way. Everybody seems to have their cards very close to their chest, and they're playing them out as they need to be played. I think this week is going to be very important, but this isn't a quick process. To actually prove fraud is complicated, but it needs to be done because you do have dead voters. You do have people voting in greater numbers than actually live in the counties where they're said to have voted. You do have out-of-state people moving around and funny business happening. You've got Dominion voting machines that can they actually have the capacity to print on the ballots after they've left the voters' hands. It's a travesty of democracy. It's a travesty of democratic republicanism. And in spite of the full court press, whether you go to Sidney Powell's Wikipedia page, where it basically labels her a conspiracy theorist, or you look at the mainstream media, or you look at social media and what you can say and what you can't say, there is a full court press to create the impression that this is a done deal. And that also is a sign that there's something amiss when the media, instead of asking questions, has just converted universally into propaganda arms of not just, you know, people say the Democrat Party. It's not the Democrats. The Democrats are, they're like a front group, just like various people in the Republican Party. They're a front group for the people who actually hold the power. See, the smart money, the billionaires, the international financial class, the central bankers, all these people, they don't go sit in the chairs. They don't stand for election. That is beneath them. They sit back behind the scenes and fund these people into positions of power and control them. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's open stated public relations for these people. And those folks are who are the real targets. Those are the people who are your real, the people's real enemies. If you look at the Biden transition team, the so-called transition team, if he actually gets through this procedure, because there's no guarantees, that's the other thing. People say, trust the plan. You know, I say it's all inevitable and everything's going to work out 100% guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed. You got to keep pushing. You got to keep fighting for justice. You got to keep making the arguments. Because if Biden actually ekes this thing out and he gets into office, he's already brought all the lobbyists back in, folks. His campaign transition team actually contains people who worked for Dominion Voting Systems. They gave money to the Clinton Foundation. The people who counted the votes supported the Clinton Foundation, support Joe Biden. That's a conflict of interest, and it undermines democracy. These are very real things. And when the media is ubiquitously telling you that none of this is real, even though the evidence is staring you in the face, you have to hope that the big guns are still sitting on the dry powder. And that's what I think this week is going to proceed like. Will the media report it? Will you have to fight to learn about it? Will you face increasing censorship? Of course you will, which brings me to an update. As many of you are aware, I faced my own battle with censorship again, and this is a long-term battle. Back in 2015, 2016, I went through six or seven, I can't remember which one of those it was, but six or seven personal Facebook accounts. My original Twitter account was taken from me, I don't even remember when, but there was a prolonged period where I couldn't seem to maintain accounts on social media platforms without getting them taken away. It's not like I was engaging in hate speech. I wasn't doing anything like that. The latest escapade was, as many of you know from my Facebook censorship video, had to do with, and I'll try to clear this up again, a non-existent post. So I had made a post condemning demagoguery, condemning communism, condemning Nazism, saying that as soon as we get done dealing with one, we bring up another one and we have to move past this cycle of history. In September, it got flagged and they took it down. Well, apparently I had shared after this notification, FPV's post from FPV is now back on Facebook. We're sorry we got it wrong, which is the big thing that they do now. You see Jack on Twitter, you see Zuckerberg doing it. They take their notes from Justin Trudeau. If they just say they're sorry, they can get away with blackface. They can get away with groping women. They can get away with being best friends with pedophiles and hanging out with other pedophiles. They can spend a country dry. They can promise electoral reform, never deliver it, and just go on a taxpayer-funded apology tour of Canada saying, I'm breaking my promise and I'm sorry. Of course, the tech overlords took note. They said this guy got reelected after doing all this stuff, and all he had to do was say that magic word, sorry. So they're sorry they got it wrong. So the post, the original offending post, no longer exists. I had shared that post. We're talking like a year ago. I had shared that post either, I'm not entirely sure, back to FPV, like I'd shared it again back onto my own page, like you'd retweet yourself sort of thing. I think that's what I did. The original post doesn't exist, but the algorithm saw the share of the post that doesn't exist. They flagged the share of the post that doesn't exist. They must have had it cached somewhere, and they slapped me with a 60-day ban, which took me pretty close to the inauguration where I would not be able to communicate with my audience on Facebook. They've now lifted that ban, and they're sorry they got it wrong. Now, a number of people have said to me, what are you still doing on Facebook? Look, folks, I'm not going to leave until they kick me off. I'm not banking on being there. I'm not going to cry tears of sorrow when they finally take it away from me because I recognize that Facebook is not my property. I don't have free speech there. It's not guaranteed. They play being a platform, even though they're a publisher. There's this legal game that goes on, but the bottom line is all of us exist on Facebook because they allow us to exist there. But that being said, I got 14,600 or whatever it is followers there. I'm not just going to let that go, so I just keep posting content there until they take the page down. And when they do, I'm like a phoenix. I will rise again. But this resolved actually in my favor, which is noteworthy in itself. All right, so something's come up, and I'm going to have to cut this one far shorter than I wanted to, and we'll get back into it maybe in a video tomorrow. But I'll finish up with this. People constantly say that Hillary Clinton conceded the election to Donald Trump. Well, she did it not the night of the election. She gave a speech the day after the election where she verbally conceded to President Trump, but they still fought on. They joined a campaign to overturn the Wisconsin results. They joined a push by Jill Stein to overturn the Wisconsin election results, and they said that they would be welcome to join any potential recounts in two other closely contested states, Pennsylvania and Michigan. I'd like to put together a timeline of all the legal challenges that the Clinton campaign actually launched in 2016. But beyond that, as many of you watching this know, and this is just a pure statement of fact, they spent 4 years trying to undermine the president. Whether it was Elizabeth Warren or Nancy Pelosi or any of the other prominent Democrats, they talked about how mail-in balloting can be easily made fraudulent. They talked about how Russia interfered in the election. They launched a very expensive, very thoroughgoing investigation into the presidency to try and overturn the democratic and judicial will, the constitutional will, of the United States in putting Trump in the presidency. It wasn't just about the vote. It was also about all the different constitutional processes that got Trump there. They spent years trying to undermine it. Their whole reason for existence was that Donald Trump was put on the throne by Russia. Their whole reason for existence was built on accusations of fraud by the Trump presidency of one kind or another, one kind of corruption. They also singled out mail-in voting as being subject to fraud. These people have completely flipped their script in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. We're now on to 2 weeks. There's a reason for that. And it's very simple, that the narrative will change with the wind. Whatever they need to say is what they're going to say in the moment. And the thing about the left is their memories are so short. It's actually not just the left. It happens on the right, too. Everybody seems to forget how things transpire, how things go along, because there's this, I don't want to call it a zeitgeist, but there's the whirlwind of the moment every day. We're tuning into the news to see what the whirlwind is. Then we go to social media, to Twitter, to Facebook. And we talk about what everybody else is talking about that day. So we're all caught up in this whirlwind. I used to play a game back in the day called Quake. I don't know if too many of you out there will remember Quake. I don't know if it was Quake or it was Quake 2, but we used to play this. It was like an open beta. I went to a friend's house, and he had the coolest computers, and we would sit there, and we would play the first three-dimensional version of a shooter. It was a step beyond Doom. Video games are a whole other thing that we can discuss. But in this one, I can't remember the name of the room, but it was this really small map. And if you crammed enough characters, if you crammed enough people into this room, there was like this whirlwind of death is what I called it. And it moved all around the map. And if the players ran into it or they accidentally found themselves in it, you were just dead. This whirlwind was just all bullet fire everywhere. That's what comes to mind when I think of social media right now. It's a whirlwind and everybody's sucked up in it. And whatever the focus of the moment is what's getting everybody to assassinate everybody else. And this degrades our long-term perspective. It degrades our 10,000-foot view of events and how we got to where we are. And honestly, understanding how the world that we live in right now, coming to understand how we got here, is absolutely critical for protecting and understanding where we are going. And it is mission critical to understand that the Democrats and the technocrats, the social media lords, the censorship, all of it has been geared to one function for 4 years, and that is the destruction of the Trump presidency. Nobody gives him credit where credit's due. What's he doing right now at the Pentagon? He's racing to get the troops home. This guy was the peace president, folks. What happened to the anti-war left? What happened to the people who actually want non-intervention in global affairs? That's what he's trying to do right now. And people call him a warmonger. They say he's a danger because he's got the nuclear codes. He's the only reason they probably weren't used in the last 4 years. Remember, they wanted him to go to war with Iran. They wanted him to go to war with North Korea. And the entire time, all they did was try to undermine him and pull him down and get somebody in there that would actually get the wars going. Now, you can hate Trump all you want. You can be critical of him. I have been critical because that's what honest people do. We think and we criticize, and we're not just team players. We try to call it as we see it. Trump has made mistakes. COVID-19 is a whole other subject for discussion about how things were handled, and you can discuss it from multiple ways. You can say he didn't do enough. You can say he didn't do too much. There's a commentator out there by the name of David Knight. Can't stand Trump because he was in favor of lockdowns, because he went along with it, and for a number of other reasons. Look, there's a lot of nuance there. But here's what I see. I see a bunch of people who were doing everything they can to try and undermine this presidency for many, many years, now have completely flipped their script and said elections are secure, they can't be stolen, these record numbers, these record turnouts, all these dead people voting, all of these computer glitches, all of these sworn affidavits where poll watchers aren't allowed to watch the counting as they are legally obliged to do, it stinks to high heaven. And it should concern everybody, left, right, and center, because the freedom of the world hinges on the upholding of the Constitution and the proving of electoral integrity in the United States. If there is no electoral integrity in the United States, there will not be electoral integrity in any other nation in the West in the coming years. Nothing short of that is at stake. I apologize for the abrupt exit, but I must go. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one. Please consider supporting my work at frankvaughn.ca/donate. And for those of you who have, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I generally have a rule, which maybe is foolish, and maybe I need to revisit it, but I do not reach out to individual donors. I don't reach out to donors. I don't write them emails. I don't try to milk them for more, and I don't try to provide them with special attention because I'm trying to keep the playing field level. But I do appreciate it. And maybe I should change that. But I humbly thank you either way, and I'll see you in the next one.